Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tigers Down Under. I'm your host Alex, and with me I have Dan. How are you, Dan?
Look, I'm pretty good. Can't complain too much, I guess. Yeah, ready to talk some football.
Ready to talk some football. It feels like it's been a little while. Obviously, we took the break a couple of weeks ago as my daughter arrived into the world, unintentionally referencing her middle name is Rose, which is actually my wife's choice, and I only belatedly realized it unintentionally references Resenia. So it's a nice little nod to City in there, which was not even snuck in by me. So there you go. But so it took a couple of weeks off with that, which, you know, kind of conveniently coincided with City having the break last weekend because Coventry had the FA Cup, and now we're into the international break as well. So a few weeks until the next game, but look, we thought this would be a good chance to fill the airwaves with a bit of City content and round out those three games since our last episode. So we'll start off with, well, I think like I sort of said pre-episode, we'll talk about all three games sort of collectively because they were all draws. It was interesting. I think I saw Resenia said, because it's four draws in a row now with that West Brom game as well, I think Baz Cooper sort of said to Resenia, hey, look, you know, we're seven games undefeated. That's a pretty good run for City. And Resenia said, yeah, but it's also four games without a win. So a couple of those games, you look at West Brom, you look at Preston, you look at Leicester, and you go, draw's a pretty good result, you know, take a point there. Wouldn't you know, obviously you'd rather the 3 points, but, you know, happy not to have lost the game. But then the Birmingham game's probably the real stinker in there where we really would have hoped to bank the 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, like, while you're picking up points, it's always handy. It sort of keeps you moving in the right direction. But I think certainly that somewhere in this sort of run of games, we needed to collect three because I think we're now sort of where that just slipped away. I think we've got a game in hand over Norwich, but I think we're the 3 points behind and inferior goal difference now, where, you know, that gap between the chasing pack is very tight again, where, you know, an extra couple of points would have made a huge difference. If you got a game in hand, you're only a point behind Norwich, for example, then that's a whole very different equation. So a bit frustrating, and it's sort of because we're now at that point where we're starting to sort of crunch, it's almost number crunching week by week, looking at the permutations and going, well, you know, if we had a won that game, if we hadn't copped that late goal, if we hadn't given away that penalty, then we'd be like, you know, here, there and everywhere. But yeah, a bit frustrating, but I think I guess not necessarily even like, I wouldn't even say there were good performances all round, but I think like there were still some good signs in some of those games. It's kind of weird though, because it felt like I think the Birmingham game was the one that confused me, because it felt like that was the game we really should have just been going out to attack and go at them, but it felt like that was one where we kind of seemed to...
Birmingham to me was sort of like, we've had these games recently where we'll go a goal up and we've held on in a lot of them. Huddersfield, we did concede, but then we won anyway. But Birmingham felt like the game that we were always going to cop of, like, you know, you go the goal up, you go conservative and it's worked for you, but this is what happens when it doesn't.
Yeah, I think that's probably it's a complaint or a criticism that's popped up a bit over the course of these draws, is that we seem to get ahead and then we're not really going on with it. We get a lead and we go, okay, well, we can protect a one goal lead for, you know, 80, 90 minutes. And it's just never going to happen. So I think, we just need to, I think, you know, we've got the players with the capability to really, you know, to punish teams. And I know we haven't been, super clinical lately, but I also think that, you know, part of that, like, we've because of the conservative, we go a goal ahead and we go into a more conservative approach for the remainder of the game, that we're not giving ourselves, you know, not creating as many opportunities as we could, because we're at a point where, you know, if we're scoring as just an example, like one every, you know, five good chances that we make. Well, at the moment, once we go a goal ahead, we only make sort of like, you know, three or four of those good chances in the rest of the game. But if we sort of kept going at them, we make more of those and we give ourselves more opportunities to score and get ahead. And I think like those, in those early parts of the games where we're getting those leads, you know, in two of the three games, talking about, like Birmingham was like 20 minutes in, Leicester was 15 minutes in. And at that point we won a penalty and, stuffed it, and then, and you know, and then recovered from that to score again. And in neither, in those periods of the games, we didn't really look super vulnerable, like at the back. And so it's a bit strange how, like, when we play on the front foot and we play the way that Rosinha says we want to play, and you know, we want to play aggressive and attacking football, and that when we do that, it seems to work. And other teams, we have them on the back foot, but then we get ahead because it's worked, and then we change to like try and protect the lead. So I don't know exactly what's up with that, whether it's a psychological thing about, you know, with how close this, these playoff races are and how few games are left in the season, whether the, you know, the players a little bit creeping in and going, well, we've got a lead, let's not do anything to jeopardize that. And so they play, you know, maybe that little bit safer or something. And I just, it's just not quite working, but hopefully, I mean, they're away at the moment in Turkey, or going away shortly for
yeah, I think they just got there. Yeah,
bit of a sort of a summer camp, or winter camp, I guess it is over there, or spring camp, something camp, whichever season. They're on a bit of a camp in a warmer climate, and I think that that might be good just to go and free themselves up and relax and have a bit of fun, work on, you know, I guess some of that stuff, get that clinical edge back, hopefully. You know, Özcan's taken, I think, another 50
I think it's 50 supporters and then plus one, so 100 people all up, I think.
Yeah, over again, which is amazing. This no other club in the world is doing stuff like that. And that's, I think, that's really exciting, really special when you stop to think about it and you go, like, we've got a guy who's doing, like, things that, like, no one else is doing. Everybody wants a guy who's coming in and being passionate about the club and putting money into the club. But you I think, like, he, I think because of like how, what he says, like, that he's always a football fan first. And I think that is kind of at the heart of what he's doing. He gets what it is like to just be a fan, and he wants to make those connections and make those memories that, you know, the people who have been on these trips in the last couple of years are going to remember them, you know, for the rest of their lives.
I think that's
extremely,
it.
Extremely jealous that I can't be a part of it.
Yeah, because I think when he first announced that first trip to Turkey, it was sort of announced as, you know, I'm going to do something that no other club has done. And everyone kind of went, oh, geez, you know, what's this going to be? It's going to be some reality contest or something. And you're right, like, having, you know, an owner who's going to fly supporters out to a training camp with the players and everything is awesome. And he's done it again, which is great to see. And you're right, like, hopefully the camp can, because it does sound like they've not going, it's not a pre-season camp, so it's not like it's a fitness camp or anything like that. I think it is very much about rejuvenation and refreshing the players and refreshing them for the run in. I think what's telling for me when you look at a game like Birmingham is, in comparison to say a Rotherham, or as I said, like a Huddersfield, is, you know, if Birmingham's equaliser had come 10-20 minutes earlier, do we go out and get a winner? Because it's amazing how often when we're behind in a game or chasing a game, we do come up with these chances and we do get the goals. Mm. It's when we're up 1-0 that we just seemingly don't make those chances. I think Tufan had a shot just before halftime that hit the post against Birmingham, which, look, it's one of those fine margin things as well, where it's like maybe that does go in and then all of a sudden we are 2-0 up and that does change the game. And it's not as if we're making zero chances, but like you say, it's a lot more infrequent, and it's just frustrating to think if we are able to get a second goal in a game like that, or a first goal in the game, like, you know, against Preston, Preston sort of hammering us for the first 20 minutes and then us gaining control, passing the ball through them really well. I think after that game, I sort of said in the chat, oh, you know, it'd be nice if someone made like a montage of all of Greaves' actions from that game, because he was just immense and perfect. And then the club did exactly that, because I think he had something like 19 out of his 19 duels sort of split between aerial and ground duels won. like you say, like the defense isn't necessarily doing much wrong in these games. It's just, it's a frustrating one because I just can't put my finger on it. And I don't know if it's a psychological thing with the players or if it's a direction from Rossignol, because I think it was that Birmingham game where Morton came out after the game and actually said, you know, it's on the players. Like, we're not finishing our chances. We're not being clinical enough. We're kind of taking our foot off the pedal sort of thing. So, look, either the players are just covering for Rossignol and they have a great relationship with him and they're going to put it on themselves and Rossignol is telling them to back off and they're saying, oh, look, it's our fault. Or it is the players and it is the players getting... it's a very young team, which we have to remember. So, like, maybe it is just a psychological thing that the players go that one goal up and then kind of go into their shells a bit. It's a really difficult one to put your finger on.
Yeah, I think like when you put it in context and you go like, what are they playing for in this moment? And certainly a real young team with, you know, they've all got the dreams to play in the Premier League and obviously to be a part of a team that wins promotion to the Premier League is, you know, it's history making. It's the stuff that, you know, legends are born from these sorts of like run-ins and these moments. And, you know, we've got, you know, like Mo Diame, was, you know, certainly a handy player before he came to us, but, you know, cemented himself like in folklore for us with his actions in those, you know, in those final months in the playoffs, for us to win promotion back to the Premier League. And so I think there is, you know, I think there's a little part of them where they're feeling like the weight of the situation a little bit. And hopefully, yeah, that the trip away lets them just free up a little bit, because if they can go back to, you know, how they've played in some of the games early in the season where this was so, you know, the end of the season was so far away and it was too early to talk about, you know, final positions, they've played some amazing football and it's been I guess one of those seasons. It's up and down, but I think generally that we've been defying expectations for pretty much the whole thing, sitting much higher than most people anticipated. And I think it's just been that defying expectation for such a long period has sort of meant that the goalposts have shifted for everyone now, including, I guess, the players, the staff, their own internal targets and what they were hoping to achieve. So I think I would say it's a little bit of that pressure that comes from the context of the season. Is maybe playing its part, but they're gonna have to work to find a way through that if they want to make it, I guess, mean something.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the top 10 and only Preston have scored less goals than us. I mean, Middlesbrough have scored the same amount, 53. We've conceded 46 to Middlesbrough's 52, so we do have a better goal difference than them and also to Preston. But part of me looks at that sort of stat and thinks, you know, sure, maybe there's part of it's just we're not creating enough chances and that sort of thing. But also part of it, I think to your point, is it's not that it's a false position that we find ourselves in, but it almost shows the economy of points that we're sort of churning out despite our low goals, where you kind of go, in another season, maybe we actually aren't as well off as we are. And so in that sense, yes, we've been around the playoffs all season, but maybe this is that sort of seventh, eighth place finish sort of season. And it's just the fact that other teams have taken their time to get going, like a Norwich and a Coventry as well, that we've sort of found ourselves in a bit of a false position. And look, that's not to say that we can't in the last 9 or 10 games come out and, you know, flick a switch and get going. And you look in that Leicester game, for example, sort of like the Southampton game, the players show that they can play at that level. They can go toe-to-toe with these big teams in the division. And Zaruri, with an assist and a goal, maybe he's finally going to start get going. Carvalho with another goal. You know, Slater's really stepping up. And Slater's showing, he seems to be one of those players where the higher level that he's playing at, that he can rise to that level. I don't know if you saw Rossignol had an article during the week basically saying that he's the sort of manager that if we were to get promoted would give the group that got promoted a chance to play in the Premier League first up. And Slater strikes me as exactly that sort of player where it's like, if you give him the chance, some managers would basically say, no, we have to replace him. We'll get someone in and not even give him a look in. But he's the sort of player, I feel like if you give him the chance, you could actually suddenly find a Premier League player in there.
Yeah. He reminds me a lot of Clucas in that like ability just to sort of rise to, in the right environment, the ability to rise to the occasion. Cause I think sort of with us in that Premier League season, he defied all expectation, but it sort of dropped off after he left us. In that similar, a similar sort of vein where I see him as, you know, if we did, I agree. I think he would rise. You know, he's never going to be silky, classy midfielder, but I don't think he would find himself out of place because of his, his work rate and his work ethic.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. Okay, well, I'm going to test your memory now. We're going to go through each of the games and give our votes for the games. I'll give mine first, and then I'll see if you have any alternate views for any of the votes. We'll cast our minds all the way back to Preston, which was, you know, sort of 2 weeks ago or something now. And you can't go past Jacob Greaves, I think, for that one. We'll talk when we get back to the Leicester game. Obviously, big shame that he's now copped his 10th yellow card. He'll miss for the two games against Stoke and Leeds. But that game against Preston, to me, we've talked for weeks now about the levels that he's risen to and the quality that he's showing. And I think, you know, none more so in that Preston game. I thought he was terrific. Already touched on the fact he had those 19 of 19 duels won. Just the fact that he can, I think his experience having played at left back or left wing back for us a bit as well has given him that confidence when he, you know, makes those runs forward. So he was looking really composed and dangerous when he was doing that as well. So he got the three for me. Coyle, I thought, was really good on the right-hand side as well, making a lot of runs and getting forward as well. I think his end product sort of lets him down a little bit. Like, he had a few shots where if he, was able to find the target, could have been quite a dangerous prospect for us. But really stretched Preston well. And I suppose telling for a 0-0, but I also gave the one vote to Giles. So three defenders in that one for a 0-0. I guess the attackers didn't offer too much. But I don't know if you had any other thoughts for that one.
I've ended up going pretty similar. I've got Greaves, Coyle and Jones as my one point.
all defenders.
Yeah, so I've gone all defenders as well. But I just think, yeah, you're right. I think alongside Greaves, Jones has, I think, as well grown in stature this season as well. And I think the pair of them have forged a really strong partnership, or I guess continued to develop that strong partnership. But it seems to be that they're both sort of stepping up to the mark where, I guess, you know, I think in some of the frustrating games we've had this season where maybe Greaves was played at left back, it's been sort of one of the centre backs was, you know, played really well. And then the other, so when it was sort of Jones and McLaughlin, it sort of seemed like one would have a really good game, but the other one was a bit sloppy or, you know, but it seems like at the moment, you know, we seem to have that settled back four and they're all, you know, all performing really well. So, we're on Greaves, Coyle, Jones.
Nice one. And so then for the Birmingham game, Tufan and Ömer came into the lineup with Slater and Zaruri dropping out. I went Ömer for the three votes for this one. I thought he's, you know, I mean, if you want to consider Giles a permanent signing, then he's up there as well. But Ömer definitely as the signing of the January window in that sense. It's nice to finally have a permanent signing from Turkey that's actually kind of worked out quite well. You know, obviously it's nice when both parties can be happy that, you know, Ajun gets his Turkish representation. We've got Tufan and Ömer in the starting 11 or around the starting lineup. And then actually the club's pretty good spot with it as well, because they're actually contributing and doing well. Not like when it's someone like a Cynic who you're sort of forcing into the lineup occasionally just to give him a look in. But yeah, I thought Ömer was terrific in that game. And he's been really impressive to me since he's arrived. Seri for the two votes, I thought he was really busy throughout the game. And, you know, he's sort of the heart of that midfield, pinging passes as he does. Was a pretty good one for me as well. And then Greaves for the one vote. I kind of struggled for a third option for this one, but I thought Greaves again was pretty much a standout in defence. No votes for Tufan, because we haven't talked about it, but no votes for Tufan. I'm docking him a point because he does bundle the ball in with his hand. All the goals count. It's great that it counted, but I'm hesitant to give him a vote for that.
I think you're just being a bit bit pedantic there. I mean, it's no World Cup hand of God moment.
Yeah.
Look, I think you're right in your shout for Omer. I think he has really settled in, and I guess surprisingly quickly. You know, I think we talked about when he arrived, about, you know, how he'd sort of be, I guess, like eased into the team. You know, and it was sort of like, well, this guy, he looks like we'll give him this sort of time to get to terms with the championship. We'll give him a few minutes, and then he'll be sort of like acclimatized for next season, because normally that's sort of, you know, they sort of need that bit of time. But, you know, it was a few weeks really, and then he was contributing you know, well, and I think he's just really growing sort of game by game, week by week, in his importance within the team, which I guess, like, I mean, it's what you want. You want the players that you sign to come in and have impact and you know, add something to the team and push the other players in their positions. And I think he's doing exactly that. He seems to be able to find space really well.
Yeah.
And I think for the most part, plays a pretty simple game, you know, just moves into space, gets the ball, plays it off, but has, I guess, has that sort of element of trickery as well, where in the right positions can, you know, can beat a player, can make some stuff happen. So I'm really hoping that he can add some end product in the last 9 games, start grabbing some, you know, more regular assists, nab a couple of goals. I think will do him and us the world of good. So I've mirrored you for the 3 points for Omer, and I am going to go, it's going to be a bit rough because I just like slagged you off for, you know, being harsh on Toufan for not giving you points for the goal, but I'm actually going to give points to Carvalho for the ball, for the court, with the ball that came in, because I think he is, again, is one who's been working really hard. He's been, you know, getting in good positions, but also, you know, when he's in those wide positions or on set pieces, whipping in some really tempting balls, and it paid off somehow this time. And then I'll go 1 point to Sarri as well. So very similar again.
There you go. Also swerving on Toufan. Fair enough.
Yeah, look. I don't know.
This is something that I'm just like, oh, it's, you know, once you see the angle where it's just pushing it in, you're like, oh, it's all right. And then look, for Leicester, talking about Omer and his end product, one thing I hadn't said, that was it an overhead kick or something he had against Leicester that just missed? I mean, he's starting to show that he's quite dangerous. And it's just been, you look at some of his highlights from his Turkish league displays, where I know he wasn't ever a prolific goal scorer, but he does score a banging goal at times. So I'd love it if he can score one for us in the closing weeks. And very nearly did against Leicester. Sort of talked before about, you know, Greaves getting that yellow card right on the edge of the box, which felt like it must have been a tricky position for him, because I'm sure he just felt like he needed to do it. But, of course, now misses the Stoke and Leeds games, which is a big shame. But in terms of votes for me, I couldn't go past Slater for the 3. I thought he was terrific. You know, mirroring his display against Southampton, which I think was his other sort of standout display of this season, he's clearly one that rises to the challenge. You know, running from our half at the ball, past half the Leicester team to win that penalty early in the first half was fantastic. Coyle, I gave the 2 votes to. I thought he was terrific as well. Really dependable for us as always. And then Zaruri, the 1 vote for, you know, the pressure and winning the ball back to play Carvalho in for the opener, and then, of course, getting his own goal in the second half. As I sort of said before, hopefully it's a sort of a sign that, you know, Penny's dropping is probably a bit harsh. Maybe acclimatizing to the team is finally happening for him, and he can really kick on in these last few games and sort of add to the goal tally and his influence in the team.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Zaruri is seeming to, he's got a couple of goals already and starting to, yeah, I guess, yeah, you're right, sort of find his feet, find his place within the team, within the system. I'm going to go sort of, yeah, similar but different again. So I tend to agree with the 3 points. I'll go 3 to Slater as well. I just you know, that the his involvement early on, or not just early on, but early on specifically with that massive run that sets, you know, should have set us on our way essentially. But you know, his just general involvement in play and his heart, his work rate that I've already mentioned today, but is outstanding. So 3 points to Slater. I'm going to go 2 points to Zaruri, and only because he probably would have scored more points had he not missed a penalty. A point to Carvalho, which was probably one of the softest penalties I've seen taken in a little while. Wasn't real good. Didn't really hit the corner. Didn't really have power. Bit disappointing, but
I just felt like, you know, similar to the Philogene one against Watford, I think it was, it just felt like they're lining up for the penalty. I'm like, oh, we're gonna miss this. You need, this is where you need like a Delap. Like, we're really missing a Delap to just sort of bury the ball, because both those penalties,
I just don't know what happened to was Tufan on the was he on the bench, maybe that's why.
Well, that was because that was the other thing, is we didn't make any subs in this game. And which is yeah, and I think he was on the bench because I think
he
came in, Slater came in,
he's
for
been
Tufan.
Like ice cold for us from the penalty spot, and you know, particularly, I mean, last season especially, with some really clutch moments, some really big penalties in you know, big moments in the match, and he seemed to always put them away. So I don't really.
Yeah, no, that's a good shout as well. And it was an interesting one because it was definitely, as the game wore on, it was one where you could almost tell, like, we were playing so well and we were creating chances and it was an end-to-end game and either team could have won it. And neither manager really wanted to make subs, because it was sort of like, if you make the sub, do you disrupt the rhythm? And it's like, when you play, like, why change a good thing? So it was a really tricky one. And then it kind of got to like 80, 85 minutes. I was like, I don't think we're making a sub here. And we didn't. So yeah, certainly interesting one. It's not as if we were, well, I guess it wasn't as if we had to rest anyone for an upcoming game. So I guess they just sort of ran them into the ground. But yeah, look, it was an interesting one. Well, we'll talk now. We've got Stoke and Leeds over the Easter weekend. So not this coming weekend, but the weekend after. So it's sort of a funny time to be doing the podcast, because we've kind of got the games were long enough ago that we can't really remember the detail. We've got the games coming up still a week or so away, but we thought we'd get it smack bang in the middle just to give a bit of perspective at both ends. Stoke's the first one on the Friday, so it must be Saturday morning. Who we did beat 3-1 last time we played them. They've since changed managers, with Schumacher coming in from Plymouth. Sorry, not having a great time of it. I think they've lost three of their last five. I think, yeah, looking at that, and I think before then it was actually an even worse run. They've actually come good somewhat recently, because they've pulled themselves away from the relegation zone after briefly finding themselves in it. But putting it simply, I mean, it has to be a win. And I dare I say it probably has to be by sort of two or three goals, really, if we're going to have any sort of confidence, any sort of signal of intent that we're going to finish the season with a real push for the playoffs. It has to be quite comprehensive, I think.
Yeah, I think that's been, that's been the issue in, and I think we've lamented the fact in previous episodes of every time we get in this position where we are in a position to take advantage and to make a move and to solidify, you know, that place in the top six, or, you know, to break away from the pack or to make a statement, we always seem to just sort of drop our bundle a little bit.
To that point, and actually, sorry to interrupt, but to that point, it's almost like a I don't know what you call it, like a broader version of the in-game going 1-0 down. In a way, do you think dropping out of the top six actually helps us? Because now we're chasing and we have to go out there and go, stuff it, we can't be conservative. We can't just go one goal up and sit on it. We actually have to go out, and we know that, you know, Norwich have a better goal difference. We know that they're 3 points ahead of us. We actually have to, it puts a bit more pressure on us. Do you think in a way that might actually help?
I mean, possibly when you think about it in that way, and you do make the comparison to the way we perform in games, and it could have, it very well could have that effect on us, that it could actually you know, maybe at this point in the season, having sort of slipped out, but not by much, that we're still in it. It's not like the game is over and we have to give up the ghost. We're right there. That it could actually be sort of the thing that spurs us on to go, well, you know, if we want to do this, you know, we want to make the playoffs. Well, you know, Norwich's goal difference is what, 6 or 7 or something better than us.
Yeah, something like that, because they just smashed Rotherham and Stoke, didn't they? Yeah. So 8 better than us, actually.
Okay, so 8 now. Okay, so they're 8 better than us. So we need, maybe it will be the impetus to say we need to get it together and we need to go out and we need to take some of these teams and put them to the sword as a true statement of intent. Just picking up points now isn't enough because... Mm. As we come into this run-in, that we see every year how crucial goal difference becomes in terms of final positions, and this is probably going to be one of the tightest races for probably that sixth spot that we've seen in a little while. So I think goal difference is going to be super important. So I could see that it in a sense working in our favor. I guess the downside is, you know, that. You start running out of games real quick, and any moment where we don't pick up points is not quite damning, but you know, increasingly damaging sort of each game week as we move towards these last rounds. So I think we do need to go out and we need to score some goals, and I don't know, it feels like every time we play a team down the bottom we say this, but we haven't really managed to do it much. So
yeah, especially at home. I think away from home we've done a little bit better, but Stoke will be coming to us probably just trying to set up shop and keep the score down, which doesn't tend to help us, because you know, we sort of like it when teams are able to come out and attack us. You know, Emers off with the Turkish squad, I think Ahio's off with the Dutch Belgium squad.
Or under 21s. Yeah, sorry, Dutch.
Oh, sorry. I always get mixed up if he's Dutch or Belgian. I think he's Dutch.
No, I think he's Dutch, but he came from a... Was it a Belgian club?
Yeah.
Yes, so I think that's what it was.
And then I think, is there somebody else off? Well, I think is Morden off with the English under 21s as well, with Philogene potentially? I don't know.
So.
There's probably a few players who are away. So, I didn't touch on it, but I mean, the fact that Philogene hasn't had too much of an impact in the last few games as well, I'm hoping this refresher can kind of click him back into gear as well, because we're definitely going to need him and his output for the closing games. It'll be an interesting one. I kind of look at whether we just line up the same as we did against Leicester, because it was such a good performance. But I can also see the argument to throw Connolly in if he's fit. You know, it sounds like he's doing really well on the camp over in Turkey, so hopefully he's sort of raring to go and can start this one just to give us a bit more shape. I think when we talk about the fact that we're not creating those chances or we're not putting them away, having a focal point, having a striker to play in behind will help us. But then I just, you know, we're just talking about Zaruri's looking good, Ermer's looking good, Carvalho scoring goals, Philogene, you're not really going to be looking to drop. That's a front four. Where do you get a fifth player from unless you're dropping like a Morton or a Seri, really? Like, it's a really tough one.
It is. I guess it's one of those things where it's the problem you want to have.
Mm.
You want to have players who are in form. But, yeah, I think we do seem to... We have performed better this season in general when we've had... like a designated striker, you know, or like that number 9, you know, designated in that position. Whereas since Delap's injury, we haven't really been able to cement anyone into that spot. I'm expecting sometime in the next week or so of their little Turkish camp to see some footage that the club releases on their thing of Delap out on the grass with the team or something.
I think he's still with Man City, unfortunately. I don't think he's gone on the camp. But you're right. Like that'd be perfect to see him back up and running, because I think he's meant to be due back in the next 3 weeks or something. So
yeah, because I know like a couple of weeks ago he went away. He went to like Portugal or something for like a rehab camp, and I think he was sort of doing some running and stuff over there in the warm weather. So
I mean, part of me is like, Man City have probably the best rehab facilities, the best medical care. I'm almost like, oh yeah, just let him stay with them, and just they can work their magic and get him up to speed, and we'll bring him back to us when he's, you know, fully fit and ready.
Yeah,
to go.
I just, because he's been in and out a little bit. He's been there and then he's dropped into the Cottingham or whatever a few times to sort of G the boys up. So I don't know. I was hoping. I hadn't really paid attention to where he was doing anything. I was hoping or expecting that there'd be, like, because I was like, that's exactly the kind of thing that their social media team would do, would be that little like teaser of, you know, him out on the grass to get everyone excited.
Because how cool, you know, we got Leeds on Easter Monday. You sort of just you have no sort of leaks in the build up, and then you see the team sheet drop, and it's got Liam Delap leading the. You just go, oh my god. That would just be, I think that's probably a little bit too soon. But
I thought you were going to go with a different sort of the symbolism of Easter and the revival of Liam Delap.
That's a good shout. For the Stoke game though, just before we do talk Leeds, score prediction for this one. How are you feeling?
How I'm feeling? I don't know. I'm going to be optimistic, and I'm going to say 3-1.
Same score as last game, yeah.
Well, I didn't actually think about that, but I was going to say 3-0, but then I thought with Greaves out, not that that means that we'll definitely ship a goal, but just that change of personnel.
Of course. I said, we can't go the same lineup. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think like, you know, I'd be saying Martin will come in, but that will mean that, not that they don't play well together or anything, but I just think that little, he hasn't played in a while, you know, a few months. Not a lot of regular football.
Was his last game the game that we watched together where he was pretty poor against Swansea in the first half and we tuned it out? And I think he got hooked at half time, and that might be the last one he's played. He played FA Cup. But
time will tell. If Andy Smith starts against Stoke, we know what's going on. I think that might just mean a little bit of the sort of communication will be a little bit different, and it might just leave us for some sort of a sloppy goal to cop. But I think we've got enough firepower to win with whatever that looks like, even if that is with the same front four. I think I'm expecting the breakaway will refresh and revitalize, and we'll come back very positive and very aggressive and go out to win this game. So I'm tipping a 3-1 victory.
Yeah, I think I might go 2-1. I think it'll be, it feels like it'll be an edgy game. So it's a sold out MKM again, which is awesome to see. It's great to see that sort of happening pretty regularly now. And I don't think we're doing too many of the ticket deals that we did last year. So it's actually happening a lot more organically now, which is awesome. I think if we don't score within the first, 20, 25 minutes, I think the atmosphere will get a bit edgy. So I'm really hoping that we can score one early. I do think that then they'll peg us back and it'll be 1-1 and everyone will be sort of groaning and booing and moaning and everything else. And then I'm hoping that we can, you know, get a 2-1 win, maybe a 3-1 win. Connolly on the score sheet would be awesome. I think Philogene on the score sheet as well would be awesome, just to get some confidence and goals flowing through those guys again, would be good to see. And then we have the big test on Monday, who currently are the league leaders in Leeds, which will be awesome. So Tuesday morning, our time. Of course, had the 0-0 draw with them last time out. Traore really sparing their blushes with probably one of the misses of the season. But, you know, it's a Leeds side that, you know, presumably when we face them, we'll be either top of the table or else very much in that hunt and trying to put the pressure on Leicester and Ipswich as well. They've been in like ridiculous form. I think they've won every game this year and only conceded 2 goals. They drew with Huddersfield. So I think they've won every game bar one since the turn of the year, which, you know, it's an interesting. The funny thing is that I'm actually less nervous going into the Leeds game than the Stoke game, maybe because of expectations that it's like the Leicester game, like the Southampton game. You go, oh, well, whatever happens. But I actually feel like we just match up better in these games and actually play pretty well. So they're kind of more entertaining games, more enjoyable to watch as a result. I expect, you know, throw Slater in there. He's probably going to have another man of the match performance. And yeah, look, hopefully we can sort of punch them in the nose and get a result, because you know, we'll definitely, it's sort of at that point, we just sort of need to be getting results in pretty much every game. Even like, I'd almost say like even a draw is not really enough. I feel like, look, if we get a draw, take the draw, but kind of have to go for the win, really.
Yeah, I it's a give me an interesting one. I think yeah, big derby match, against the team that we love to hate. Mm. So I think it'll be interesting. I think with where we are, where how the sort of tables all come together, and what they're fighting for and what we're fighting for, I think it's going to be a fairly emotion charged game. But I think within that, like, both teams play good football, so I don't think it's going to like get out of hand in terms of like crazy red cards or anything silly like that. But I think it's going to be a pretty full blooded affair. And I can't even begin to actually predict what's going to happen in there, because I think I can feasibly see this ending in any of the three options. I can see us, you know, like, you know, snatch and grab, taking a 1-0 win. I can see it ending as a 0-0 draw or a 1-0 draw, and I can also see, you know, Leeds, you know, continuing their great run of form and you know, turning us over. So I actually just have like no idea. Like, if I make a prediction, I mean, they're all just,
yeah, like, no, whatever, sure.
But
yeah,
I'll just stay optimistic and say we're gonna win.
Absolutely.
I'm tipping a 1-0 win over Leeds.
I was just having a look at the fixtures, and Norwich actually mirror our fixtures pretty well, because they've got Plymouth when we take on Stoke, and then they face Leicester when we take on Leeds. So I sort of take back a little bit the fact that it's not a must win in that sense, because I was sort of thinking, oh, whoever they face, they'll probably win and we'll be further behind. There's every chance that they could also lose to Leicester. Mm. So at least psychologically, it wouldn't feel as bad if we weren't to pick up points against Leeds. But it then also presents a huge opportunity. Like, if we can get 3 points against Leeds, all of a sudden we're back in the driver's seat. So it's going to be a really interesting Easter block of fixtures. So we got the Stoke game, 2 a.m. Saturday morning, and then Leeds is televised. So it's on BN Sports down here, so it won't be on Tigers Plus, and that's at 6 a.m. on that Tuesday morning. So, you know, a reasonably, you know, local friendly.
I might have to be running late to work on that.
Yeah, that's it. It's my first day back to work, so I might be a little bit late as well. But I think I should finish at 8 a.m. So I might be okay. But look, if we win, I might be, you know, cracking the champagne and celebrating before I log on for the day. But yeah, no one from work watches this podcast, so that's okay. But yeah, look, so it's gonna be an exciting couple of games to look forward to in just over a week's time. But thank you for joining me for this one, Dan.
Yeah, no worries. I think for we sort of said that we weren't going to talk about those games, first few games, in detail. We just found a lot of other shit to talk about. Yeah, so it's been probably longer, a bigger episode than I sort of expected, even though we had a lot of, you know, five games to talk about. It's
I was just going to say, five games, like, you do end up sort of finding a little bit to talk about for each of them. But yeah, look, and thank you everyone for listening in. We'll be back potentially next week with another one of our flashback episodes, as we tend to do over these international breaks. We're already up to the Slutsky season or era, which is pretty remarkable. That's getting relatively recent, and the sort of the rebirth or the birth of Jared Bowen as sort of the City icon that he became, which will be exciting to talk about. So we'll try and be back for that next week. And then, of course, back for our regular episodes after that to recap on the Stoke and Leeds games, which hopefully end in victory. But until then, come on, City. You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group, or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber and Black. All the city's on fire, with a burning desire. Tigers are roaring, a destiny's calling, cause now is the time. Yeah, the city's on fire, we're going higher and higher. There's no turning back, cause you're out.